Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Voice of Indie podcast, episode number 51. I am your host, Beam Weeks, from Lansing, Michigan. And with me, somewhere in the wilds of Indiana tonight, is my co-host, Stephen Jeeves. How you doing down there in Hoosier State?
When you live in Alabama, we tend to think of it as up here in the Hoosier State, but I'm doing all right. I'm here on the shores of Lake Michigan, looking forward to going into Chicago in the morning. We're going to do Shedd Aquarium tomorrow. I haven't been to Shedd Aquarium in decades, and if you haven't been, everybody should go. And if you haven't been for decades, it's time to go back. So Shedd Aquarium tomorrow. I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, I haven't been to Chicago in decades, so I'm due for a visit, a return visit. Maybe next time you come up, we'll have to go and hit Chicago instead of Cleveland.
Hoping
something new over there.
So Karen Ingalls' book, Learning About Autism, is out and available everywhere in all of the different formats. We got a lovely note from Karen this week. Her big rollout event was last Saturday, in which she did fundraising for ovarian cancer research. And she had approximately 50 or 60 guests show up, and she wound up exhausting her supply of books and has had to put in an order for more books. So she was real happy with that. And the main subject of the book, Carol Tucker, the woman who first adopted Justin and wound up co-founding a school for autistic children, managed to come to the event, even though she's having serious health issues right now. So she managed to come, and she autographed books, and she got to see the people and feel the support and the love and have a very good time. So Karen Ingalls is very happy with her rollout.
Yeah, something like that. You know, she with the health issues that she's battling, that Carol's battling, you know, something like that, that's always a good boost, you know, boost to the spirits. Another book that is out is Operation Arctic Sting, A Mac McDowell Mission. This is book number 3 in Robert G. Willis-Croft's series that is now out and available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and everywhere else that you buy books. So go grab a copy, and while you're at it, check out the other books that he's got. He still has one of the Daedalus books for 99 cents, doesn't he? Or is it?
No, the first Daedalus book.
Okay, yeah.
It's the first Mac McDowell Mission book, Operation Arctic Sting, the one you're talking about right now, that's going to be 99 cents until the release date of August 4th. However, it is 99 cents everywhere, except it wasn't 99 cents yet on Amazon. Informed by Amazon a couple of days ago that it has been approved and it will drop to 99 cents. And it said, look for this to happen within 48 hours. And 48 hours later, it still hadn't happened. So I haven't looked in the last few hours, but any minute now, Operation Arctic Sting, book 3 of A Mac McDowell Mission, will be 99 cents. So if you go over there and it's showing $1.99, you can still go ahead and pre-order it, and they'll only charge you 99 cents when it comes out.
Go.
But otherwise, 99 cents. Try out those Mac McDowell Mission books. It's only a buck, and it's a real, real easy try, and I think you'll get hooked on them.
Yeah, those are cool books.
Definitely. Now, if you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, get over there to freshinkgroup.com, scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, and there's a little form to fill out there. But every Wednesday morning, we're sending out this newsletter to our billions and billions of subscribers, informing them about what's happening on the podcast tonight, plus introducing new books, new videos, new authors, new this, new that. Everything that you can think of that would be better than having nothing is in that newsletter. So make sure you sign up for that.
Yeah, and if you happen to miss an episode of one of our shows, and if you're working on Wednesday nights, Wednesday evenings, Wednesday afternoons, whatever time this is or you're at, and you can't listen to the show when it's live, you can catch it in the archives. We have five places right now where you can catch it. And you can find it at beamweeks.com, stephengees.com, freshinkgroup.com, and at all three of those sites, you can find it in the podcast button at the top of the screen and top of the homepage. And you can also find us on YouTube. Just go to YouTube, type in Fresh Ink Group, and you can check out every episode that we've ever done is archived over there. And while you're there, hit the subscribe button. And when you're watching the videos, click the like button. The YouTube channel also has book trailers and some of the other kind of videos that we put together. So, hey, if you're interested in getting a book trailer made for your book, go over and check out our work. And, hey, let us know if you want one, and we can work out something. We're also on Spotify. Just go to Spotify and type in Voice of Indy, all one word, and every episode that we've done is over there as well. So check that out. And if you want to call in and participate tonight, here's how you do it.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest. Or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
All right, so 516-453-9902 if you have a question or comment for tonight's guest. And I'm going to read his bio, and this is in the first person. I didn't get a chance to change it into second or third person context, so I'm going to read it like this is Craig himself, C.S. Boyack, speaking.
I want to hear the accent.
All right, you just over-modulated there. Back from the mic.
Go ahead.
Okay, I was born in a town called Elko, Nevada. I like to tell everyone I was born in a small town in the 1940s. I'm not quite that old, but Elko has always been a little behind the times. This gives me a unique perspective of earlier times and other ways of getting by. Some of this bleeds through into my fiction. I moved to Idaho right after the turn of the century and never looked back. My writing career was born here. With access to other writers and critique groups, I jumped in with both feet. I like to write about things that have something unusual. My works are in the realm of science fiction, paranormal, and fantasy. The goal is to entertain you for a few hours. I hope you enjoy the ride. And with that, welcome to the show, C.S. Boyack. Craig.
Thank you, Bean. Glad
hey,
to be
Craig.
Here. Howdy.
Good to have you here. Now, you've lived in Nevada and Idaho. Have you lived anywhere else besides these two places?
Oh, there was a brief stint in college in northern Utah.
Northern Utah, okay. Why Idaho?
Pretty much in that western orbit. You know, Idaho is just one of those cool places that it was different enough than my hometown that we had forests and some things that aren't that sagebrush desert, and I just wanted to see something different.
Okay. Here's an early question right off the bat on Twitter. Robert G. Williscroft, he is asking whereabouts in Idaho?
I am in the Boise metro area in a tiny little place called Star.
Star, okay. And before we get too far into this, Dr. Helen Burrell, she writes, Hi, C.S. Boyack, love your website. Going back to delve into it more deeply after your show tonight. I love your story about your attachment to your locale via earlier times. And Verwayne Greenhouse says, I get my email from Fresh Ink Group about the same time that I get up and kick on the computer. It's a very informative and always fun to read. And thanks for the
endorsement,
Verwayne. Always a pleasure to have you and your wife, Lisa, in the audience. Okay. Steven, you want to take the next question?
How about you go ahead and roll one of our roll-ins?
All righty.
This one would be learning about autism.
Sure.
Learning about autism, one mother's journey of discovery and love, a charter school, teaching methods, and resources is the book millions of families must have. Carol Tucker travels the road of autism and cerebral palsy with her adopted son, Justin, now a young man who routinely astounds physicians with his achievements. She is a special education teacher, recognized leader in children's advocacy, and one of the founders of Florida's first charter school for autism, where she served as director. Through photos and stories, best-selling author Karen Ingalls shares Carol's journey, then offers a wealth of resources, teaching methods, school choices, and financial assistance options. With Karen's unique insight, learning about autism shows how one very determined mother and her family can rise above daunting challenges to thrive and find happiness. Learning About Autism is published worldwide in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook editions.
All right, now available, so it's everywhere you buy a book. Get on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and check it out.
Yeah, the audience for that is surprisingly broad, too, because it's an inspirational book. If it's just, you know, you're interested in stories about families who are dealing with challenges and how they persevere and stick together and overcome them, it's that kind of a story. But if you are interested in the information about autism, it's very valuable, especially all the resources in the back. So it's just quite a mix that's appealing to a variety of interests having to do with special needs children and autism. So it's a terrific book. Everybody should be checking that out, or at least spreading the word to other people who might be interested.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be a lot of people that if they know about it, that will be interested in getting that. Okay, listeners, we are on with author C.S. Boyack. You can call in with a question or a comment, 516-453-9902, or hit us up on Twitter by putting the hashtag Fresh Ink Group, all one word, in your tweet, and we will see it. Craig, you said you moved to Idaho right after the turn of the century and never looked back, and you said your writing career was born there. As a child, did you read a lot of books? Did you write short stories or long stories or poems or anything like that? Or did this all just come about later in life?
No, I was kind of one of those library kids when I was a little kid and, did a lot of checking out books. They'd have the book fairs and I always had stuff that I brought home. And you get to a certain point in life where you start becoming that teenager and life takes a different turn. And I did not do a whole lot during my younger years that didn't involve beer and girls. And, it's just the way it is.
I remember those years.
When computers showed up, I took a renewed interest, and I wrote out some almost like fan fiction stuff just for myself, just to waste time. And mostly I was trying to learn how to use these archaic old word processors that we used to have. Word Perfects, and prior to that there was something else. I can't remember. I had one called WordStar,
I used it.
It took a little effort to try and figure out how to get them to do what you needed to do. And of course we had tractor paper we had to deal with and all those things. And I wound up here, and things had sort of perfected, I got my first iPad with the Bluetooth keyboard, and man, that was cool. And I just sort of started taking it a little more seriously from that point on. And I still actually use a newer iPad with a keyboard, and that's what I write everything on.
Cool. The technology today. I had a dentist appointment, 6 month dental cleaning and checkup and all that this afternoon. And the receptionist, she started writing out my next appointment by hand and was talking about how bad her handwriting has gotten. And we got into talking about that, and it's like, I don't write by hand anymore. Everything's done on a computer. So when I do have to write something by hand, it just looks sloppy. And used to write everything in cursive, penmanship. It had really good penmanship. And all that goes out the window because you kind of get lazy with the new technology, but I write a whole lot faster. I can knock out a short story in a short time instead of writing and then rewriting and all that good stuff. So the technology has its benefits and its drawbacks.
I picture all those kids growing up in Nevada, a bunch of street toughs standing around on a corner looking to stir up some trouble. And next thing you know, somebody pulls out a deck of cards and they're all dealing blackjack. It's just crazy
stuff.
Yeah,
not quite. We were in more cowboy country. There weren't a lot of street toughs.
So did you go to school, Craig? Did you get a college degree or just go straight into hard knocks?
I went about halfway and decided that I could earn a better paycheck, and that's where I wound up.
What were you pursuing? What was your initial interest?
You know, I was interested in scientific stuff, things like, you know, genetics, perhaps, something along that line. And, of course, it was brand new. It wasn't even something on the horizon at that point. But, you know, I got looking at what I was making in the summer versus what the hopes were for somebody coming out of college with a, you know, Bachelor of Science degree. And I just, it was an easy decision for me.
And when you talk genetics, what specifically are you talking about with genetics? You're talking about like DNA, stuff
well,
like that?
You're going back to a teenage kid in the 1970s here, and it was a new territory. Nobody really knew where it was going to go, but yeah, genetics, those kinds of things were. Always appealing to me when I went through high school biology classes and whatnot, and I wanted to see where it could go. But, you know, that wasn't the life that I got dealt.
Yeah, I always found that interesting, the whole genetics with the DNA. And I bring that up because you had lived in Utah for a while, and a lot of that stuff with the DNA goes directly through Utah. Because the Latter-day Saints out there, they have this incredible records base, and they are incredible records keepers, so they can tie a lot of this stuff together. In fact, I did the Ancestry.com DNA thing, and my mother did it as well, and it's just interesting because you see all these people that you're genetically related to. But another reason why I brought that up is because it is going in such incredible different directions. So you got some people that are sending their DNA in to find out who they're related to, and some are, you know, checking out medical things. Is there anything genetic they've got to worry about on the horizon? But there's also go ahead.
It's amazing stuff. Even crime labs and whatnot are.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. I watched this show where there's this woman who's an expert in this stuff, and she goes through to solve these decades old crimes because somebody who's related to somebody who committed a crime, you know, 40, 50 mm-hmm. years ago. They decide to drop their DNA in, and hey, your dad committed this crime. There's a direct, you know, link, and they've caught a lot of people like that. But there's this show on this like that. So that whole genetic thing is really booming. It's going into so many different directions now.
Amazing.
So we have a couple of comments on Twitter.
Oh, all right.
Robert Willis Cross says, I lived in Boise right across from the Capitol, and also in Lewiston, overlooking the confluence of the Clearwater and Snake Rivers. Man, that's a beautiful spot right around that Clearwater Snake River area. And then he says, I wrote my first three books on WordStar. Yeah, WordStar, Papyrus, Wilton.
Hey, I wrote my first two complete novels. I turned my iPad vertically, and I wrote them with my thumbs. I'm not joking.
Thumb typer. So, speaking of family, you married, have kids, grandkids?
All of those, actually.
Okay, cool.
I'm not expanding because I try to keep them out of, you know,
yeah,
internet
that's fine.
Spotlight
that's
world,
fine.
But yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing. Hobbies? Interests? What do you do when you're not writing?
I'm interested in all kinds of stuff. We like to go outdoors. We've got a camper. Used to go out and get a lot of these, they're called morels, they're mushrooms that are actually really expensive. And it's been so darn dry this year that it's been a waste of time. But I've got fruit trees with fruit set in the backyard. In fact, these ugly little birds are trying to destroy my peaches right now. And we like to go out there. There's places where we can get huckleberries, catch fish, you know, do those kinds of things. I don't know whether I put it in a bio somewhere at one point, but at one point I caught and released a 7-foot white sturgeon in the Snake River, which was really cool.
Wow. 7-footer. I've never hooked anything like that.
It's probably a protected
fish.
It's
a big fish. Yeah, they are. In fact, I don't have a frying pan that big anyway. So, you know, it was just cool to see him and turn him loose.
All right. So, Stephen, you going to jump in here with questions, or am I going to handle these?
I've been having a good time. How long have you? What was like the earliest writing that you did, Craig? I mean, like even basic stuff, stories in school or whatever. When's the first time that you noticed that you could string some words together and people would pay attention?
The only one that really lodges in my mind, if you go way, way back, there was like it was a writing assignment, and I did really well about it. I wrote, it was some kids level story, but involved Indians and teepees and wintering and how hard it was. And I got some kind of a special recognition for it. I mean, you know, we're talking 1960s here, so it all fades from memory. But I remember doing that.
Okay.
Do you still have it?
No.
You don't. You're supposed to keep those things.
That's what they say.
And then you go back and you publish them later on when you're a big, well-known writer, and this is the early works.
Yeah.
So what's your process like? Or, you know, do you do thorough outlining? You just kind of make it up as you go along? Do you get up and write first thing in the morning, or just write whenever you have time or when you feel like it? What gets your words out?
I think I have a different process than almost anybody. I get inspired by a lot of different places, a lot of different things, and I've set up, well, they're almost like social media things, but they're the fringe stuff like it used to be StumbleUpon. They changed that. There's one called Mix, and they're like magazines, but you tell it what you want to see, and they send you articles. And it's got that smartness to it, like the Pandora radio. If you like something, it'll send you more that's similar so that it improves over time. I set up some RSS feeds that I get from, they're like archaeological magazines, cutting edge science stuff, things along that line. And I browse those in the mornings when I get up, see what's there. Sometimes something will lodge in my brain, and then I start down this path of notes, and you know, maybe I flesh something out if it sticks with me for a couple of weeks. And ultimately, they wind up on, I don't know of anybody else who really does this, but I make storyboards. And so they're index cards on a board concept, only I have an app that does all that for me, so I don't have index cards flying all over the house. And sometimes it can take years before one of them turns into a story and gels, but I have probably half a dozen of those at various stages right now, so I can just pick something up and go with it, and I've put time into it to where it's got characters and events and things that I want to happen. When it comes to actually writing, I like to do it in the morning. It's cool, it's quiet, and you know, if I can get a couple of hours on a Saturday, that's fine. I'm totally a weekend warrior. I still work for a living, so days off, I try to make use of that, especially as ungodly hot as it's been this summer. I've spent a lot of times indoors writing this summer, which probably isn't healthy, but it is productive. I've got two books in the can right now that I need to go back and start doing some polish on and try and get them ready for people to look at. And I'll probably give up the drafting of new material so I can focus on those here the next month or so.
So these sites that you use with the RSS and all that, you use those as inspiration as well as like research?
Mostly inspiration. If something trips my trigger, you know, some cutting edge new piece of technology, then I'll go to the internet and I'll start diving deeper into it to see what I can come up with. And, you know, a lot of them, you just look at them, you turn them off. It, you know, it's not like you have to have inspiration every single day, but I get these ideas and I find these things. I mean, you get all kinds of stuff, but it's not like you're going to pick it up on the nightly news or you're not going to learn of this stuff, that, you know, if you go to coffee shops and whatnot. But the systems are set up so good now that they'll send stuff to you, and the more that you read, pay attention to, hit the like button, you get similar stuff. And it just keeps coming. I had one guy going back many years now. They were excavating these graves from antiquity in Poland, but they had all been staked through the chest and nailed into the ground. And, wow. You know, it seems to me like somebody was concerned about vampires, you know?
Yeah.
But it's real. This stuff really happened. And I like having that little bit of a tie to something realistic, even though I may take it to an absurd level when I get around to writing it. It's neat to know that there was some basis there.
Yeah, that's interesting. I vaguely remember years ago I had subscriptions to National Geographic and Smithsonian, and I vaguely remember something about that where they had excavated this, you know, burial place, and these were all staked. I couldn't tell you much more about it. Just a vague memory of seeing something along those lines. That's weird.
So we have a couple more comments on Twitter.
Okay. All right.
For Wayne Greenho says, I was going through Mr. Boyack's bibliography and realized that I already owned Macabre Sanctuary, most likely because I remember Harmony Kent had a story in it. I really enjoyed that book. It's a good endorsement.
Yeah.
Cool.
And he says, you never need a reason to write. Before that, we had some comments from Dr. Willis Croft, Robert G. Willis Croft, science fiction and thriller author. He says DNA is also being used to determine what kinds of diet supplements a person needs for the longest life. Yeah, there's all kinds of promise. I've been reading about that lately.
Oh, I've been reading a bunch of them about paleontological work they're doing now. They've even identified missing human species through little bits and pieces they've picked up now, but we've never found the fossil from the missing one. So people are out looking for that now.
Wow.
Cool. So why paranormal, fantasy, and horror? Is this stuff that you read as well?
Yeah. I refer to it as just a collective group of speculative fiction, but you know, anything that fits in there that gives a little escapism, you know, those kinds of things. I always liked science fiction, fantasy, paranormal, those kinds of things. And that's my wheelhouse. That's where I try to live. I don't see myself writing cute romances or any of those things, although I may have a Western in me at some point. Even it may wind up having ghosts at some point, you know?
Oh, you got to have ghosts.
Ghost to the West. I gunned him down one time before. I'll do it again.
So, Beam, do you want to roll another commercial? And
sure.
Before you do that, let's remind listeners, we're looking for callers. Call 516-453-9902, and we'll put you right on the air. But this commercial is for the Mac McDowell Mission series, of which Book 3, Operation Arctic Sting, is now out and should be 99 cents if you want the ebook.
So grab a copy.
Now, from Fresh Ink Group and best-selling author Robert G. Willis Croft, the Mac McDowell Mission Series. With a security clearance above top secret, Saturation Dive Team Officer in Charge Mac McDowell leads his team into critical Cold War counter-Soviet missions. Watch Mac prove what brave men can achieve under real pressure, the kind that will steal your air and crush the life out of you. In Operation Ivy Bells, it's the summer of 1972 when Mac and his off-the-books deepwater espionage group are conducting a daring undersea wiretapping operation to gather Russian intel and avert world war. Join nuclear submariner Mac McDowell for extreme diving, a battle with giant squid, and more as he risks everything in the most dangerous operation yet. In Operation Icebreaker, Mac McDowell is leading his submarine team for a mission to lay Sosus arrays under the Arctic ice when they clash with a highly automated Alpha-class Soviet submarine. Overwhelmed by mechanical problems, the Soviet crew abandons their sub near Point Barrow, Alaska. The skipper launches DSRV-1 Mystic so Mac and his crew can board the empty sub and gather intelligence. The arrival of an even more advanced Soviet sub leads to breathtaking underwater clashes with the specter of war looming. Will Mac and his crew be sunk by the Soviets, or will they safely return to Alaska, where Mac's new love, Kate, anxiously waits? In Operation Arctic Sting, Mac McDowell and his team capture the abandoned Soviet sub. Piloting their prize through the ice pack to the U.S. East Coast, they must evade or confront other Soviet subs trying to recover the ship or sink it. Breathtaking deep-sea clashes erupt, including hand-to-hand combat with Soviet Morskoy Spetsnaz divers under the ice. Too far from Tuthis to escape, the Americans are accosted by a 5-ton orca. Will Mac's ship survive long enough to reach friendly waters, or will the men become just another meal for a deadly whale? The McDowell Mission series by Robert G. Willis-Croft is available worldwide in jacketed hardcovers, paperbacks, ebooks from Kindle to Nook and Kobo and more, plus exclusive audiobook editions with music and sound effects. The Mac McDowell Mission series is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Take a breath and dive in for thrilling submarine adventures in every Mac McDowell mission.
Yeah. Now, as the commercial there just said, in audiobook form as well, we have audiobooks for the first two, and the third one, Arctic Sting, is being worked on right now and should be out before too long. And these are really cool. So if you don't have the time to pick up the book and actually read it, get the audiobook, and you can listen to it while you're working, while you're doing whatever it is you're doing. But these are well-written stories, and they are highly entertaining. That's the Mac McDowell Mission by Robert G. Willis-Croft.
And they have submarines.
And whales and giant squid and Russians, Soviets.
And a cool
okay,
whale.
Okay, so how about we start talking about some of your books, Craig? You've got a whole bunch of them, quite prolific. So I say we'll throw out a title here, and you can, you know, take a minute or two and tell us a little bit about it, the story, how it came about. How's that sound?
Yeah, we can try that.
Okay. That way we can knock out as many as we can.
You got a group of five there that's all 2014, 2015, if you want to run through all five titles and let them talk about all of them.
Yeah, okay. Let's start with Wild Concept.
I'd stay with the recent stuff, if that's possible. That one is the first one that I ever felt like had a good enough character and character arc to actually publish. And in all honesty, it's probably a little rough around the edges. I admit that. But I like the character so much that she's stuck with me all these years, and I use her as kind of a logo to promote my writing work. And I've commissioned a bunch of posters, and I use those on blog tours and publications. I sent one to you guys. I don't know whether it got sent out to anybody or not. I used to run this thing on my own blog I called Lisa Burton Radio, only it was a shtick where my fictional character would interview your fictional character.
Cool.
But it was all words. It wasn't an actual broadcast. And so, you know, the authors had to play along a little bit as if their character were sitting, you know, in radio studio and talking to this woman about their work. I ran that for probably over 2 years every single week. And then it just sort of started losing interest, which shocked me because free promo is hard to come by, and they were popular. We sold a lot of books for a lot of people with that.
Wow. Yeah. Something like that. Would seem like a great idea. I think it's a cool idea. I'm surprised that people kind of back down after a while. We'll do these first five books here, and then we'll move up closer to some of the more recent books, and then we can go back if we need to. Panama.
Panama was probably the closest I'll get to a Western. It involves an era of when they were building the Panama Canal. But I turned it into a hunt for demons and monsters, and I took these American veterans, and I shipped them down there and put them in that environment. So it has a whole bunch of creepy, weird stuff in it, you know, like swarms of insects that are being controlled by people that do brutal things to your body. And I had a sort of a gypsy witch that was there. It was really kind of an international community when they built that anyway, and I did a lot of research into it. They had different pay grades depending on what race you were. So they had like the silver level employees and the gold level employees, and they were segregated. And I tried to weave a lot of that in there that really happened. And I even experimented with doing some celebrity cameos, but they were celebrity cameos from, you know, 1900. And I had a lot of fun with it. I got a lot of good remarks and comments. A lot of people enjoyed it. And it was a fun story. I still really enjoy that one.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting thing there about, you know, the celebrities from bygone eras to where, you know, people don't really know who they are anymore. When I was writing Jazz Baby, there's, you know, people who were famous in the 20s that nobody knows who they are anymore. But, you know, you kind of name drop because that's the era.
Now, Craig, this first group of five that I'm looking at here, these 2014, 2015, are these all book length, or are they like short stories published in ebook form? I'm talking Wild Concept, Panama, Arson, The Cock of the South, and Will of the Wisp.
Those are all ebooks. They're all novel length.
Okay. And then from there, you moved on to the Experimental Notebook series, which is 2015, and then the second one is 2016. They're called The Experimental Notebook of C.S. Boyack, and then the second one, and this is real clever, The Experimental Notebook of C.S. Boyack 2. Yeah.
Kind of like Led Zeppelin 1 and Led Zeppelin 2.
I'm telling you. So what is what's the Experimental Notebooks series about?
Those are a collection of short stories, both of them, and they cover all the genres I write in. And I tried to have some different things about them. I tried to revisit at least one already existing character in each book. And so Lisa Burton, the one from Wild Concept, she got a short story in the first notebook. And there's a guy named Pete Rogers from Will of the Wisp, and he got a short story in the second one, where actually he's got a radio station in an old Airstream trailer out in the country, and he has these ghostly encounters with voices bleeding over the mic and all this stuff. It was really kind of a cool story. And actually, I have salvaged Pete Rogers, and he appears fairly regularly with his radio broadcast in the Hat series that I'm working on now.
Okay.
And let's see, what the other one I did in those is I had a character that went across both books I invented named Jason Fogg. And I pull Jason out every once in a while and write a story about him. And at one point, I'd written more stories about Jason Fogg than anybody, which shocked me. He wound up in the last anthology I participated in, too. We had to write it was like a murder mystery book, and I used him as a private detective to solve the mystery that he was involved in. And so, you know, for collections of short stories, I think they did really well. A lot of people really liked them. You know, you get a dozen stories, they're not all going to be winners, but I thought they were pretty good, actually.
Okay. The next group is four books from 2016 through 2019. The Playground, The Enhanced League, Yak Guy Project, that's an interesting title, and Serang.
Okay.
What are these about?
Oh, where did we go? We had Playground in there.
Yeah.
That one was my attempt to do something kind of Tarantino-like, where you have these three different views of a story going on, and ultimately they're going to all come together by the end. But it involves this supernatural problem, a big businessman who's manipulating a social network to take over the minds of children through this line of toys. And it was pretty popular. The one guy from the book, I only gave him one name. His name is Clovis, and he was super popular. And he's like almost a mafia leg man class character, and everybody liked him. And I actually recycled him into the Hat series too, but it was a one and done type of deal for that character. He showed up in Viral Blues, and people just love Clovis. So, you know, if you're interested in something that, you know, might be a little more Pulp Fiction style, that was where I was trying to go with that story.
Well, I love Tarantino's work. He's one of my all-time favorite directors, and that's the thing I like about him, is that you'll get the same scene played out from different points of view, and then you see how they all kind of come together at some point and give you the broader overview, which is really cool. I've never written anything like that, but I'd like to try one day.
Did you carry that style through that little era there of your writing, the Enhanced League, Yak Guy Project, and Serang?
No. Let's see, where did we get to? The Enhanced League. I wrote that one for myself more than anything else. I wanted to explore something, and I wanted to learn something at the same time. So it's actually a collection of short stories that together tells a bigger story. So, you know, there might be a little bit of that angle in there, but I wouldn't go so far as to say it's Tarantino-like. There are two or three characters in there. I also experimented with second-person point of view. I tried to limit those to one page, but they were like uplifting bits about the game of baseball, where you are this or you remember this, kind of a point of view. I had a lot of fun doing them. I called them anthems. But it's about a futuristic baseball league where anything goes. It's got a little bit more pro wrestling angle to it. People have not stopped them from using performance-enhancing drugs. There's a character in there who's a pitcher who has a prosthetic arm. I had a lot of fun with it. I don't know that it ever sold really well, and I didn't think it would. Baseball not being the popular sport it was, you know, 60 years ago. But I had a lot of fun with it. I really enjoyed it. And the few guys that took a chance on it seemed to like it.
That sounds interesting. Anything goes. All right, Jimmy's going to charge the mound with a bat in his hand. Oh, he just hit the pitcher in the head. Oh, that's a double. He's going to steal third now.
So who is the Yak Guy?
The Yak Guy has some weird story to it. A couple of goals I had. I wanted to write somebody who had no backstory. Sometimes we get a little hung up in our backstory and we want to, you know, include all this cool stuff for these characters. And so this one it's almost like an alternate world concept where this modern youth, you know, gets into drugs. He's a tough, he does bad things. And ultimately the story is that he winds up getting shot through the head and winds up waking up in the desert. But he's not where he used to be. He's in this alternate world now. And he has to go through and learn and grow up and expand. And laughingly enough, for the plot, I used the major arcana of the tarot cards. And so essentially you have the Fool, my main character, who goes through and he meets these characters along the way, and you go through the deck of cards As I got plotting it out, it gets a little absurd. I'm not going to turn him into a god or a planet, or, you know, I'm not going to go quite that far. But you've got, you know, the death card, and you've got the chariot, and some of these things, the wheel of fortune. And I tried to include things in the story that were along those lines, along with the lesson those cards are supposed to teach. And the first thing he meets is a yak. It's a talking yak. And he's kind of a brutal mentor who sticks through with him to the very end of the story. And a lot of people really liked it. It didn't sell tons and tons. In fact, I almost made that one of my freebies this time because I thought maybe it deserved a little more love than it got. But I went a different direction with my freebies, and we'll talk about those. You brought one of them up in this cluster of books. But it was kind of neat because I wind up allowing this kid to grow up. He has to – it's almost a sink or swim world. It's a little more brutal than the world we live in today. And yet he's able to get through, so there's some uplifting bits to it. I had a lot of fun writing it, a lot of fun researching it, and trying to figure out what the lessons of the various – cards might mean so that I could put them together into a plot.
Sort of a yakety yak.
Now, Serang, which is spelled S-E-R-A-N-G, that's very highly reviewed, and I've not read it yet. You want to tell us a little bit about that and why everybody likes it so much?
I would love to tell you a little about that. Serang first showed up probably a third of the way through a book called Voyage of the Lanternfish. And she wound up being one of the most popular characters in the book. And her backstory, talking about backstory, now I'm going to actually do backstory, okay? But rather than, you know, try and weave that into the Lanternfish series, I decided I was going to give her own book that was basically her origin story. And because it was a fascinating story that got her to the point where she showed up in the other series. And basically, it's an alternate world. It's a fantasy. And her father is a fisherman who dies out while he's out fishing. Her mother's destitute, can't take care of her, and basically gives her to a monastery. And we're thinking Chinese monastery here, not Catholic school deal. And she learns martial arts, she learns to work, she learns about taking care of herself. But then there's this political purging where they come and they massacre all the monks and they wipe this whole system out, and she escapes as a small girl. And from that point on, she wanders through what essentially is China, even though it's an alternate world, and there are fantasy creatures. I did a big scene that I really enjoyed in that one. It had this heavy fog that this mentor she found called the Child of the Dragon. And the Child of the Dragon actually winds up having a little conversation with her, but it's sort of beyond the mist. You don't really get to see the dragon. You learn a lot about the lore and whatnot. And ultimately, she becomes this powerful warrior person with daddy issues, and she's still sort of looking for, you know, her father and some resolution to that whole problem. It wound up being a really good story. And in all honesty, I thought it was one of those that deserved a free day. And so I set it up on Amazon for a free day, free stretch, I guess I'll call it. Started yesterday. You guys with your newsletter and some of your promotion pushed it out along with another book that I assume we're going to talk about here fairly soon. And I checked before I went to bed last night, and it was number 2 on the Amazon free list in one of the subcategories. Mm-hmm. So I'm really thrilled with the performance. I gave away 650 books yesterday.
Wow.
I'm up around 300 today. Of course, there's two titles, but...
what is the other title?
The other title is Grinders.
Grinders, okay.
It's probably Grinders. Further down Stephen's list, but Serang is a good story. I think if people give it a chance, they're going to really like it. It's a coming-of-age tale. There's some brutality to it. You know, you can almost make some modern ties to certain parts of the world right now. And yet there's a fantasy element too. There's a little magic. There's a little going on there because it's one of my stories. They're all going to have something like that. But it's a good tale. I think people that download it are going to be happy with it. And it's still free. It's going to be free tomorrow too. So hello out there in Blog Talk Radio land. If you
get out there and grab a copy. I mean, it's free, everybody, free. If you're a reader, you love reading, grab both of these books.
Yeah, both of them.
I also have an ulterior motive because it's a great way to walk into the Lanternfish series if anybody's interested.
Well, this is what we're getting ready to jump into next. Let's talk about Voyage of the Lanternfish and HMS Lanternfish.
Okay. I started out and I wanted to write a pirate fantasy. Nothing more, nothing less. I'm calling it fantasy anyway. It has gunpowder and maybe breaks some of the rules, but I wanted to do this. And it's the same world Sarang is set in, but this involves a guy on the verge of marriage. His wife gets kidnapped. He's basically confused with his father by this evil person, and they want the father to start a war with a neighboring country, except somebody's mistaken one party for another, and it winds up being this young guy. And we spend a little bit of time on land. Ultimately, he realizes that his strengths are at sea, and he takes to sea, and he takes the war back to them. And it's got some pretty crazy stuff in it. I've got some good characters. Sarang is in there. My main character, James, I really like. Some of the people who fleshed out the pirate ship, I've got a witch doctor who takes on the role of the ship's surgeon. I've got some oddball characters to fill out the pirate crew that I think a lot of people have really enjoyed. And then there was something I never saw coming at all. I invented these creatures called root monsters. And if you look at the reviews, that's all anybody talks about, the root monsters. And they speak pidgin English. They do these obnoxious little things. At some point, they're like a swarm. If they get into a big pirate battle, swarms are really scary. But they're little. They're the size of your hand, maybe a little bigger. And they're these little pirate guys that people just went crazy. And I was asked to write a root monster standalone book, all this stuff, which makes me feel really good. I think there are other good characters in the book, but you know, when somebody fixates and focuses on something like the root monsters like they have, it really makes you feel good. And I had some requests to, you know, write another story in that universe, and I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to do now, right? I kind of felt like I left it all on the page. And it dawned on me that I could fit that into a classic trilogy style, and to where your relatively innocent person tries to solve their personal problem, which is Voyage of the Lanternfish, but they get exposed to a bigger world and a bigger problem and wind up getting involved in that. And the best way I can explain that is it's sort of a classical trilogy style is Star Wars, the original three movies. And so I thought, yeah, I could do that. I think it was one of the hardest things I've ever done. But I got HMS Lanternfish out last year. Same thought process, same environment. We're moving the pieces around. In the second story, you know, the bad guys are supposed to have a victory, which they did have a victory. And all the reviews are about the root monsters. So, you know, when you've got something good, you go with it, right?
Oh, definitely.
And this last winter, I beat my head against the keyboard for months, and I finally have what I'm calling Wreck of the Lanternfish, fully drafted, and I'm hoping to get it out this year. In fact, I promised everybody I would have it out this year. But I got a lot of time left. I'm going to spend some time going through it, polishing it, making sure it's you know, up to snuff, brings that good resolution to the trilogy, but it'll be coming out sometime by the end of this year.
Cool.
Oh, yeah.
Beam, you want to roll another commercial before we talk about the Hat Series next?
Sure. All right.
This would be The High Road, which is next week's guest, Mark Herndon, Country Music Hall of Fame drummer from the group Alabama, and his wife, Leah Seawright, will be here next week on the podcast.
This is The High Road.
What drives a man to spend 26 years performing night after night? To persevere through a stifling tour bus, bad food, strange women, flared tempers, a plane nearly blown from the sky? Just how did that troubled military brat with a dream claw his way from dirt floor dive bar shows to the world's biggest stages? Aviator, author, and Country Music Hall of Fame drummer Mark Herndon lived that dream playing with Alabama, one of the most popular and celebrated bands of all time. He learned some hard lessons about people and life, the music industry, the accolades and awards, how easy it is to lose it all, and how hard it is to survive, to embrace sobriety, to live even one more day. Herndon's poignant memoir offers a tale at once cautionary and inspirational, delightful and heartbreaking, funny yet deeply personal. From innocence to rebellion to acceptance, can a man still flourish when the spotlight dims? Are true forgiveness, redemption, and serenity even possible when the powerful say everything you achieved somehow doesn't even count? That you're not who you and everyone who matters thought you were? Find all this and more in Mark's remarkable memoir, The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in paperback and ebooks, and now in the keepsake dust-jacketed hardcover edition demanded by true fans. Mark Herndon refuses to slow down. So look back, look ahead, and join him on the trip. He's taking the high road.
And like Steven said, that's our guest for next week, Mark and his wife, Leah. So you definitely want to tune in, especially if you're a country music fan, an Alabama fan, or just a music fan. Mark's a very interesting guy. I've read the book, The High Road. He's just got some incredible stories to tell in there. People he crossed paths with, and just some cool tales. So tune in next week.
Yeah, my lady friend in Alabama had seen Mark perform at least 50 or 60 times over the years, including being at the very first June Jam, which was down there in Fort Payne, Alabama, when the band Alabama started playing Fan Appreciation Day every June. And she never missed a show and thought that she knew everything there was about Mark. But I took her to a show that Mark and Leah did last month, and she got to meet Mark for the first time ever. And I just happened to have a hardcover copy of his book and a Sharpie with me. So she managed to get an autographed copy of that, which just was a great thrill for her. But when I was talking to her a few days ago, she had just finished reading the book. And she said, man, I thought I knew all about Mark. I learned all kinds of stuff I didn't know. And she's that much more of a fan. She just thought that he's just a great guy. And in the memoir, he's very heartfelt. He talks about things sometimes that are hard to talk about. But he's a real guy with a good heart. And you can see that come through. And I was glad to see that a longtime fan still managed to learn a lot more about him and see a lot of value in that book. It's a great memoir.
That's the cool thing about memoirs is that, you know, some stuff that was never talked about before is now there on the pages.
Yep. So we're on with Craig Boyack, who goes under the author name C.S. Boyack. And we haven't had a call in today's show yet. And it's not looking good, but we're going to give you another chance, people. 516-453-9902. Call in with any comments or questions that you have for Mr. Boyack. But in the meantime, we're going to ask Craig about the Hat Series, which is four books and one in progress. These are The Hat, Viral Blues, The Ballad of Mrs. Maloney, and Lunar Boogie. Plus, I don't know what the new title is going to be, but maybe Craig will reveal that today. So what's this series about, Craig?
Stephen, I think I'm just going to have to talk with you guys if nobody wants to call in.
Yeah.
you know, The Hat is basically, how do I even describe this? It's kind of a superhero story, but kind of not. It's definitely paranormal, supernatural, that side of my field I work in. But basically, you've got this 20-something-year-old woman who's working multiple jobs to make ends meet. And she winds up stumbling across this deep family secret. And the secret is in the form of a hat, who is actually a creature from another dimension. He was brought to our world by witchcraft and bound into the shape of a hat to help one of Lizzie's ancestors. And so he's been with this family all across what amounts to human existence in one form or another, helping them essentially battle the things that go bump in the night, the bad stuff. And so she winds up taking up the mantle of this monster hunter in modern America. And I've tried to make them into dark comedy, which I really love. And so they're supposed to have some humorous moments in them. The two of them argue and bicker like an old married couple. I tried to play off the generational differences between a modern girl with modern sensibilities and something that may have been around for thousands of years, to where he doesn't understand what the internet is. He spent 20 years in a hat box and missed all that. The last owner was Lizzie's grandfather, and so he's missed that whole technological revolution that occurred. And I had a lot of fun with that. And I also try and do all the crazy things that even remotely occur to me in this series. There are little cartoons in the book. I was trying to do cartoons in the margins, but that doesn't really work on an e-book. So I wind up using them like section breaks for a lot of things. There's some snarky remark, and then there's a little cartoon, and you move to a different part of the story. Those kinds of things. When I need a real section break, I use bass clefs, simply because the hat himself is a musician. He plays the upright bass. But, of course, he needs to be symbiotically tied to his human and use their fingers to be able to play the stupid things. And so one thing leads to another, and she can sing, so they formed a band, which was really kind of cool for me because it gets them out at night when things might be roaming the back alleys and parks at night. And I've tried to have every kind of crazy fun you can imagine with it. I even put emojis in the last one. I haven't had them break the fourth wall yet, but who knows? I have put characters from previous books in there. This is the one where I keep reusing Pete Rogers with his Night Bump radio show. And I based that on a guy from Nevada, actually. Had a show called Coast to Coast.
Yes, Art Bell.
People would call in and talk to Art Bell about all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And so Pete's show is a lot like that. And what they do is they're calling in talking about her and the adventures that she's gotten involved in. Only they get it completely wrong, and they've created this entire urban legend that is insulting to her and yet somehow relevant to the stories to a certain degree. And I've had a lot of fun with it. I just, anytime I can come up with something new to try to do, I actually wrote out some dialogue for this last book and emailed it to my daughter who lives over in Sun Valley. And I said, this is a text thread that we're going to have. So text it to me, and I'll answer back. And we did that, and ultimately I snapped a picture of it with my camera phone and then put it in the book as a text thread between two characters in the book, just because I hadn't seen anybody ever do that before, and why not? This is the series where anything goes. And it's full of dark humor. I've tried to walk Lizzie through from being a total noob to her experience with various, let's call them Universal Studios monsters, until the point where she is maybe a little more seasoned, a little more veteran character, and that's the one I've got in the box right now that I need to get to and edit sometime probably this winter after the snow flies.
The title. Does that one have a title?
Yeah, that one's called Good Liniment. And I have a cover on order and three Lisa Burton posters to help me promote it with.
All right.
All right. How about we move on to Grinders, since that's one of your freebies. Anything
you
want to add about that?
I got a little feedback there, but you guys are moved on to Grinders, I take it?
Yeah, you had already talked a little bit about Grinders.
Is there anything you want to add on that? Yeah, before we move on?
Yes, I had a lot of fun with Grinders. I put a lot of research into it. It is a cyberpunk story, so now we're in science fiction. And it's probably 100 years into our future. It's set in San Francisco. And I had a few things I wanted to say. I'm not going to lie. You know, we've had rising seas, and San Francisco looks dramatically different than it does today. And not 100% accurate on some of the topography. But instead of Telegraph Hill, there's a Telegraph Island, you know, things like that. And it's cyberpunk, so it's neon and holographic displays. There are holographic personal assistants. There are holographic things in your house. The smart home has evolved. We have robotics. I had a lot of fun with a robot cat in the story. And essentially, it winds up, it's a story about this grinder squad, grinders being people who modify their own bodies with technology. We're talking like backroom basement surgery people. And they exist today. They put microchips in their hands to help them, you know, they'll open car doors and do, you know, all that routine, you know, the key fob that starts your car for you. They have them implanted in under their skin, even today. I read a story about a guy who injected dye into his own eyeballs that allowed him to see in total darkness, but eventually his body processed the dye and it went away. And so these guys exist today. I just took that to an extreme level 100 years down the road. And so the police actually have a grinder squad whose job it is to bust these surgical operations, but it's not illegal to have the implants and the devices. So I tried to make it as confusing as modern day law enforcement and politics are. And it winds up that the grinder squad is like the sub basement of the police department. Nobody wants to go there. It's basically a cash cow with government grants that allows them to buy new police cars. And they just put, you know, these people nobody wants on that department. I've got one guy who's on the verge of retirement. And when they retired the mounted police officers, they didn't know what else to do with him. They put him there. And then my other main character, she got in trouble for something in her private life that they frowned upon, and they transferred her to that department. And she is trying to work her way out by catching one of these guys. And I also told it from the antagonist point of view, and there's a little, almost a heartstring there too, because he's doing what he's doing. He does bad things, but he's doing it to save his wife, who they have sort of overdone it on her implants and technology, and she's all screwed up at this point. And then I wove in a ton of research. One of the ones that I got a big kick out of, I think this was done half a dozen different places, but the one I picked up on was here in Idaho. Some people up in Coeur d'Alene had created these pebbled glass panels that were solar panels. And their goal was they wanted to put them on all the carports in all of the apartments and residential areas and whatnot up in their part of the state to generate electricity. And they clip together like Legos. They're hexagonal shape, and they just kind of click together. And they said that ultimately they would even be able to replace asphalt with these things to where your parking lots would generate power, but they'd have a texture so that it wasn't slippery. and that, you know, if they could have got their funding, they even wanted to be able to heat them. So whatever electricity they generated, you could reverse it and sort of thaw them if there was a snowstorm, that kind of thing. I don't know that they ever got to do anything more with it, but I did, and I created what's called the grid. They replaced every bit of asphalt in San Francisco with this stuff and also hooked it to its own internet system so that the cars pair with the grid, and then the grid drives the cars for you. And I had a lot of fun with that. A lot of people thought it was really cool. To where you just get in, you tell the car where you want to go, and then you can read your book on the way to the office. And the other one that I did involved some research where they were able to grow carbon fibers inside plants. And I turned that into, let's call it dyeing technology in the era of grinders in the form of the electronic forest, to where the trees used photosynthesis to produce electricity. And these carbon fibers would filter the electricity into a system that would help power the city. But as time has marched on, the grid has replaced the forest, and that's being torn out as the story goes on. I thought it was a really good story. Those who took a chance on it really liked it. A couple of them have said it's the best thing I've ever written. And I've always thought it deserved a little more love than it got, so it's one of my freebies today. And if you want to pick up a copy of Grinders and check that out, I think everybody is going to get a kick out of it. Interesting side story, between writing Grinders and Viral Blues, I put stuff in there that was stuff of my nightmares, and it all came out before the COVID pandemic. And so I've got things like cyber shut-ins, people who live in green screen rooms, and that's their office, and they do their work from home. Everything is delivered. You know, there are drones that bring groceries and the liquor store and whatever else you need. And I've got these cyber shut-ins. And then, of course, we're all under quarantine 2 months after I published the stupid thing. I had no idea. Yeah. And so people say, oh, just, you know, rush this thing to market to, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that's not the case. I actually published that right before the bottom fell out on all of us. And the same thing with Viral Blues, when I'm dealing with tampered vaccines and some of those kinds of things. No, that honestly was published before COVID ever hit, and I'm sort of facing the fallout of the way everything stacked out. But there it is.
Yeah, I see that was published September 12th of 2019. So, yeah, that goes back before COVID. Well, we do have a comment here I want to get to. Dr. Helen Burrell, she said, did you gentlemen see my post much earlier? Yes, Helen, and we even read it on the air. She repeats it again. Hi, CS Boyack, love your website. Going back to delve into it more deeply after your show tonight. I love your story about your attachment to your locale via earlier times. So we read it twice tonight, Dr. Helen. Where were you earlier? All right.
Hey, I appreciate it, though. At least we're getting some interaction.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
You know, check out the website. The website's fun.
All right. Let's try to wrap this up. You're in some anthologies. You've spoken about that. Why don't you give us a quick rundown of some of those?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch that we found, but the three main ones that really stood out are Murder, They Wrote, Quantum Wanderlust, and The Call of the Sanctuary.
What was it called? I don't remember. Call of the Sanctuary.
The Call of the Sanctuary. Well, we'll look that up again after the show. But you're familiar with Murder, Judy Lynn?
There were three main ones. Murder, They Wrote was really kind of fun. We had assignments that we had to pick certain key elements to write our murder mystery. And, it's like I'll take whatever's left. I really didn't care. But ultimately, I wound up with poison, and I had to write a story about a murder that took place with poison. And now, they're on deadlines. When they do these things, it's like, hey, we want this in so many months, and it needs to be polished and slicked up. So I took Jason Fogg out of Mothballs, and he's a character that actually can turn into fog. And so he does a lot of creeping through window screens and rifling through people's files, you know, private detective type story, a little noir to it maybe. Had a lot of fun with that one. And people like Jason. I get comments on him every time I've trotted him out. He appears in both experimental notebooks. He's in Viral Blues, which was my attempt at poking fun at the Marvel team-up concepts that have gotten so popular lately. I've got a bunch of characters that I did a team-up in that story. But the anthology is really good. It's got some great murder mysteries in there from some really good authors, and I was honored to be a part of it.
Hmm.
And then there's one called Quantum Wanderlust. I don't know if you picked that one up or not.
Yeah.
It's all about time travel. Everybody wanted a time travel story. And I took mine back to the opening of King Tut's tomb, and I created this idea, and I did a lot of research on this, that the guy who originally opened and discovered this may have actually been in there the year before. There are some strange boot prints that they discovered inside this tomb that had never been opened before. You know, and it's like, I don't think they were waffle stompers back in ancient Egypt, so these footprints in the dust don't make some sense. And rumor is the real guy had perhaps taken little bits and pieces and sold them to collectors to raise money so he could go back and officially open the tomb. And I had a lot of fun with that, too. I turned it into a little bit of a, you know, one of my kind of stories. Time travel kind of fits right in that whole science fiction corner. And I had a lot of fun with that story. The other anthology is Macabre Sanctuary. And it was supposed to be Halloween-themed stories. And all of us sort of put our heads together and put this together. And I submitted, actually, for that one, an older story I had put out on my blog only. And mine winds up being almost like a microfiction, and it's called There's a Cat on My Grave. And it's got some nice comments on the reviews. People, that one stood out for a few people. And it's basically the idea that you're never really dead as long as somebody remembers you. And so these spirits at the graveyard are starting to be not remembered after a couple of generations, that kind of story. And I really enjoyed doing those. I would probably do an anthology again. It's a great way to get your name out there. People can pick them up and get half a dozen different authors to test drive. And if you make an impression, then maybe they'll come back and check out whatever else you have, you know.
I've been involved in many anthologies, and it's always a blast because, as I say, it's just a short story, and like you said, it's your opportunity to find a new audience, find new readers.
Hmm.
So,
well, we're in the process of putting together the second Fresh Ink Group anthology right now. Lauren Smith's working on that, and Craig, we'd like to invite you to submit a short story. And all of our readers are welcome to submit a short story to that, too. Just go over to freshinkgroup.com, and there's a contest tab on there with a form that you can fill out and upload your story. So, yeah, we'd be honored to have a C.S. Boyack story in our next anthology.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I'll check that out.
So, Craig, you participate in Story Empire. Some people are familiar with that, but a lot aren't. Can you tell us what that is?
Oh, I would love to tell you about Story Empire. This started out actually as a conversation between a lady named May Claire and I about doing some mutual promotion during the Halloween season. We both had stories that fit that vibe that can make for some great October promotion. And I don't think we ever actually did the promotion, to tell you the truth. It sort of, the conversations evolved. She knew some people, I knew some people. We brought everybody together, and we formed this collective blog, and essentially it's all about helping other authors. And you'll find some stuff that's a little more advanced on some posts. You'll find some very entry-level stuff. But we try to cover a little of everything. There's tech issues. There are how to develop character issues, plot, structure, editing, dialogue. And what we've done is we set up a calendar that basically assigns everybody their day. And so you wind up posting, I'm guessing, maybe 15 times a year individually, but we all benefit from it. And it's been a nice collective. We set up our own Slack channel to where we can go in and talk 24 hours a day if we want to. And I've had a blast with some of these people. There are, man, we have 7 or 8 people now, and it's great. Everybody brings a little something different to the table, and it's gotten really popular. We've gained and grown and expanded our footprint pretty well. We're also seeing a lot of our content stay relevant. Some things that got written and posted 2 years ago are still hitting in the top of the search engines. If you go in the stats and look at it, it's a great resource for authors, and I'd encourage people to check it out.
Cool.
Even you guys.
Yeah.
Even us guys.
Check it out.
Yeah.
I know May Claire from way back at the old book club back in the day. Now we're getting close to the end of the show here, but you had mentioned Lisa Burton artwork earlier. You want to give her a shout out? She does your book covers and whatnot?
Lisa is the character from Wild Concept. She's a robot girl. And I have used her on my blog to talk about my writing adventures, you know, word count, word metrics, research that I get involved in, those kinds of things. It becomes almost a dialogue between my imaginary character and myself. It's great.
I see. See, I just got these notes, so I figured Lisa Burton was a real person. You should have kept up the charade.
She's a robot. And I get anywhere between 1 and 3 posters of her to promote with when I have a new book I want to talk about. I've got some fun ones on order for Good Liniment when it comes around. And I've even sent her out on blog tours to talk about the books, only it's from her perspective, her point of view, and people seem to love her. She gets me a lot of mileage. Anything that has an image of Lisa, if you can imagine a pinup girl, okay, anything that has an image of Lisa tends to get more views automatically. And she gets pinned on Pinterest a lot. But all that helps me because the topic is always, you know, hey, it's the Yak Guy Project and here's Lisa with the yak and, you know, those kinds of things. It's a recognizable thing. It's something people can look at and go, oh, there's Lisa. What is she up to now? You know, she's with these little talking parsnip looking things. What are those? Those are the root monsters from Lanternfish. And maybe somebody eventually gets there, you know? And so it's been a really good move for me. I use her quite a bit as a promotional tool. And, you know, she's appeared in 3 stories herself now. She also is in Viral Blues as part of the team up. Being the living, breathing computer she is, she winds up helping them on a technological basis in that story. And I've had a lot of fun with her over the years. I think Lisa will probably always be with me in one form or another. And like I said, she did the character interviews for the site for over 2 years. And I've got the artist that draws her for me also does all my book covers. He's a fellow named Sean Harrington that I picked up from the webcomic world. And he's a great artist. I have a great working relationship with him. And whenever I have a book to put out, he's out there sharing the posters that he made on some of the artist sites. So there are people that might come my direction from having seen the newest posters, you know, that I might make the occasional sale from too. So it's been a good setup for me to do things that way.
Now, does he have like a website that you could point people to?
Probably, but you know, I'm on the phone and off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Well, share that on Twitter and use the hashtag Fresh Ink Group, and it'll pop up in the stream there when you get done here. Before we finish this up and move on to how people can contact you, we got a couple more comments over here on Twitter that I'd like to read. And it says, one's from Helen Burrell, and she's talking about why she wasn't here earlier. She says, well, when I first clicked the Indie thing, it doesn't log me in before some minutes have passed. That's the reason every single time it doesn't connect me right away. It's not, she says, it has something to do with a faulty mouse. No, Helen, wait till about 1 minute after 8 o'clock and then click to log on. Cause it does that to me too, from time to time, if I'm listening to another program on there and it's live. If you get in there a minute or two, you know, before it, it might take a minute for it to catch up to you. But if you get in there at 8:01, you'll just miss the opening, but you should get right in there immediately. And Verwayne Greenhill, he had to cut out because he had company that had stopped by, but he said, interesting night. I'll check out C.S. Boyack's story bibliography and buy another copy of One of Your Stories. I missed the piece of the show, so I'll catch the replay as soon as it's posted. Thanks to the host.
Thank you, Verwayne.
I guess. And when you get done here, Craig, get over on Twitter and use the hashtag Fresh Ink Group and then click the latest up at the top there, and you can acknowledge these tweets and thank them for listening as well.
Now, listeners, get out there and get your free copies. Grinders is free right now, and Serang is free right now, both of them by C.S. Boyack. Free. Get over there and get your copies.
Who doesn't like free?
Yeah. Now, we're about out of time, Craig. Can you tell people how they can find you, social media, your handles, website, Facebook, Instagram?
You know, really, the best place to find me is my blog. I call it Entertaining Stories. It's a WordPress blog, and I am most active there. I have feeds that run out to Facebook, but I'm not super active there. They automatically feed my blog onto an Entertaining Stories Facebook site. I also have a presence there as Lisa Burton. I don't post a lot there. It's just so that I can stay in touch with other authors, other friends, and you're welcome to visit Lisa Burton's site if you like. There's actually promos for this show on both of those sites. I'm on Twitter. I don't do a whole lot with it these days. I try to share everybody else on there. I don't tend to post a lot of my own stuff there. I don't know why I've been slacking, to tell you the truth. I'm big on Pinterest. I found that Pinterest is a great resource for me. And what I do is I use it to create files to put all the weird stuff that I want to write about in. And so I have like the Hat Pinterest board. And there's all kinds of stuff that I want to use to put into those stories or have used to put into those stories. People can snoop. You might snoop ahead or see some cool images that are, you know, of the paranormal bent. I keep science fiction pin boards. I have most of the more recent titles have a pin board. I've got a couple of things that I would like to do in the future that I've started boards for. Don't know if I'll ever get to them. Those storyboards are still growing and developing, but they may become books at some point.
Cool. Okay. We are about out of time. We got like 60 seconds.
Yeah,
so,
2 weeks. We got Karen Engels and Carol Tucker. Next week, we got Mark Herndon and Leah Seawright. We want to thank Craig for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you, Craig, for taking time out on your Wednesday to stop by and chat with us.
Oh, I appreciate you having me. I had a great time.
All right, we'll see you next week, listeners, with Mark Herndon and Leah Seawright. Thanks, Craig.
Yeah, thank you to everybody that got on Twitter tonight and became part of the show as well. And we will see you all next week.
You've been a part of Voice of Indie, a production of Fresh Ink Group. spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.